Today I'm here with Bill Anderson, who has been an online and even offline friend and colleague, who has always intrigued me with his thinking about how we use technology in the application of science. Bill, in my mind, has street cred because he's been working a lot with international science bodies and has seen both the heaven and hell of this whole thing. So I thought it would be good to get a sense from you, Bill, about what you have seen and how social media has or hasn't been successfully used in science, and particularly science in the public interest, science in international development, science that's funded by public monies. So I have a couple of questions for you today, Bill. But first of all, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so you've been working with scientists around sharing scientific and technical data, which to me is a really important thing about, you know, making science in the public interest or in terms of global public goods. What role do you see for social media in this work?
Well, that's kind of a big question. What's really interesting today is that if you pay attention, there's a part of the big social kind of internet push for transparency has moved over into making data transparent, and especially scientific and technical data from publications as well as government data. So there's just a lot of talk and energy and action in the air and on the ground about making data available to anyone and anybody. So the role for social media that I've seen is that the new capabilities that we have with the internet, with just what we've been able to come up with in the last 20 years, it makes it, I think the social media just provide a low cost, very easy way for two things. One, to get the word out about data that you might have ready to release, about reports that you've written about the data, about experimental results on experiments that have been done. And the other half is to receive feedback, both formal and informal, about the, you know, whatever has been put out. And I think it doesn't matter whether you're an individual scientist or a science agency or another government body or a non-governmental organization that's doing research. So for me, it's just cheap and easy.
And are people using it?
Well, actually, in the scientific field, so I just have a small part, right? I can only see a small part, but it's pretty clear that researchers have been blogging, using wikis, micro blogging formats like Twitter and others, and services like FriendFeed, which is, I don't know if people know, kind of an aggregator to bring things together, to carry out a vast range of informal, distributed conversations, both about specific research projects and about general standards and policy initiatives. So that's been happening, and in fact, I think this year there's just the second annual Science Online conference that's going on.
It's going on now?
Sometime in 2010. I don't know. There was one in 2009, I think, which is in this autumn, and there's another one in 2010, and I don't actually have the link for that right now, but I've seen notices about that conference.
We'll have to look up that link, but that sounds like an interesting link complement to this podcast. So you talked about it as informal. Any formal use?
Well, I think to the extent that, here's the most formal use. There's the Public Library of Science. There's an open access scientific publisher that's been around for maybe 4 years now, 4 or 5 years, and they've actually become a premier publisher of scientific research, both in biology and other places. And they've just started a project with one of their journals where it's called PLOS-1, sometimes called PLOS, where articles are submitted and they're given a very light review and editing just to make sure that it's reasonable content and that it's, you know, readable. And they're doing an experiment now allowing us kind of open crowd reviewing of these kinds of articles. And in order to review, you actually have to sign up with a valid email address that they verify in some way. But other than that, they're trying to experiment with what happens if we don't gather, you know, 3 or 4 experts to really vet the paper, but just put it out there and see what kind of review and citation practices emerge from that. So that's actually fairly new, and that's fairly formal.
Good example. My next question is thinking about scientists working with scientists. So you've been working with distributed groups of scientists with some of the international bodies. What are the biggest challenges and opportunities that you've seen concerning the use of social media in this work?
So the biggest challenge is the one I think we're all most familiar with, which is of changing whatever the established work practices and customs are. I was just thinking about this right before the call, and it's so interesting because many of us as individuals, I don't want to say scientists alone, but, you know, are quite adventuresome and will try all kinds of things, are very willing to do new things, but somehow when we get together into organizations and institutions, then as an organized body, we're very resistant to getting anything changed.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just part of being human. I look at it as an opportunity to figure out how we could, you know, get past that. But I think once an institution establishes a way of getting things done and a customary way of interacting about how they make actions happen or make decisions, I think it's sometimes very difficult to change that. I think the other specific issue with social media is the challenge of being more public and open with both work that's in progress and with informal conversation.
What, to say more about work in progress.
I've seen a large, growing group of scientists that are starting to, there's something called open notebook science. One of the key proponents of this is Claude Bradley is a chemist, I think, at Drexel. He's actually been carrying out research as it's happening online in a kind of open notebook wiki. So he's writing down all the mistakes he's made, all the ideas he's put out that didn't work, which is quite unusual. Most people don't write down. As a scientist, I was trained as a scientist. As a scientist, you always keep in your notebook all the mistakes you make because sometimes that's actually turns out to be the insight you needed. But people don't often do that in public. So that's being able to carry out work in progress in public, I think, is a big change for many people.
What do you think the risks are of doing it in public?
Well, I think the standard risks have to do with, I think there are two. I think there is a professional risk of somebody else saying, oh, well, that's a great idea that Bill Anderson had. I think I'll just go take that and I can get this published faster than he can. So people are worried about that. And I think we need to take that worry seriously. I think the other part, and I'll just speak as someone who's lived in the United States my entire life and been educated in the United States and worked in the United States, I think it's very difficult, especially when you're an established professional, to admit that you don't know something. But I do believe that people in research understand that you don't learn anything without making mistakes. But the idea of actually trying to do that in a public way, I think, is it's a challenge. And for me, it's an empirical question. I don't think we know right now what the upshot of that will be.
In my work with scientists, I'd say that particularly the first one is the one they say the most, but I wonder if it's the second one that really drives us. And I'll just leave that as an unanswered question, as you say, as an empirical question. But I think it's true in other professions as well, but I think the way scientists are rewarded, it's particularly challenging. What are some of the opportunities?
Actually, I want to go back to one other challenge.
Okay.
So the second challenge, so the first one I think has to do with, you know, being familiar with new ways of working. I think the second challenge actually has to do with kind of being able to keep up with the proliferation of tools and trying to learn how to use them effectively. So there are a lot of new things that keep happening. People keep generating new things every day. Some people are like, you know, I've been blogging for a while and it took a while to learn how to do that. Then, you know, people say, well, we're not going to blog. I'm going to use Twitter. It takes time to learn how to use these things. So there's a bit of an overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And the example I have about working with new tools, which I think you're familiar with, is wikis. So wikis, in my experience, are a kind of technology that I will call people sorters. That is, people either like to use them or they don't. And I think despite the fact that wikis provide many capabilities about allowing work to happen, collaborative work to happen and to share and keep track, I still think that they're quite cumbersome to use. So the effort required, not only to change what you're doing, but then to learn how to use a new set of tools to do what you already do know how to do, I think it's a kind of a challenge, and it's just extra overhead.
Is it worth it?
Well, I'm the kind of person that really likes to do that, but, you know, it is a cost. It's been worth it for me, but it does require, it is a cost, and I think that's just something, until the technologies are built in ways that are easier for people to adapt to or learn, I think that's going to be difficult, or until we all have enough experience with these kinds of technologies so they're not so daunting, I think it's just going to be something in the way.
Makes sense. What are the big challenges scientists working in the public interest, and by saying working in the public interest, I mean working transparently, sharing pre-publication data, sharing work in process and done. How can, it's really a difficult question to say, how can social media help, but how can the application of social media and the concurrent work changes help make that happen? Do you see any kind of low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, I think this goes back to the first question in a way, but I think right now, for the biggest challenge for science today is its communication with the general public. I believe scientists communicate with each other fairly well. I mean, there are issues, but the big issue is with the public. And I think what's required is for the general public to really understand what the practice of science is. I think we are taught this in school, but I think we need to be reminded about what scientists actually do, how they look at the world, and how they make sense of things. And then the other piece is to actually communicate how that work actually helps us solve kind of the health, environment, food, crime, education, social problems we actually have to deal with. So I think that's the biggest issue. I think being more open is better. I mean, I don't see why somebody in the general public can't be given access to research literature. You don't necessarily need a PhD to read a paper. I think being open is, one of the best ways to go, and then being able to really interact with the people when they have questions. That's why I think social media provided the best way to do it, because you can communicate quickly, you can communicate at low cost, you can communicate interactively if you're able to set up the kind of system that allows, comments and replies. And I just think that the opportunity is here to really make a change in how the whole kind of conversation happens. So I think that's the challenge. And I just think social media are the lowest hanging fruit. Blogs, Twitter are just fast and easy ways to communicate.
Terrific. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.